gentlemen. You are welcome to this meeting of today. Like you know, we didn't do our legacy report, so we thought it would be quite very well to do it before we go to recess, so that when we come back, we must not have a lot of stuff that left behind. So that is why I'm saying we were going to do it's only two items. But in two items, item number one, it has plus minus 1, 2, 3 sub issues. Okay. So I will, because I've seen we have guests here, I will request members to introduce themselves and everybody to introduce themselves, so that we can know who is in this meeting. We must not say that lady, you say, and then before I can, we can start. I just want to take the apologies for this meeting. Okay. Honorable Bibi will join us. She's still attending in the meeting of programming committee. And then Honorable Koni, she's also attending a programming meeting. Yes, sir?
Katila Buskafne as well is in the programming meeting.
Okay.
I want to believe Honorable Smith will join us a bit later.
Mm.
I'm trying to locate it. Thank you.
And also Mam Gwen, she's also attending the presiding office meeting. So she won't be part of this meeting. And she did formally send the apology. So it means we're gonna continue with our meeting. Do we accept those apologies, honorable members? Accept. Okay. You propose, you second, honorable. Okay. So, without wasting any time, like I said, we have visitors here. I will quick, we must introduce ourselves so that we know each other. My name is Tebogo Modise. I'm the chairperson of this committee.
Matibe Chitareke Baldwin, Limpopo.
Andrew Arnold, Western Cape.
Mlindi Nano from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, members of the committee, visitors. My name is Kubis Yusa. I'm the content advisor of the committee.
Morning. My name is Asuka Bawa. I'm the committee secretary. Thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Bulela Mfekane, secretary to the chair.
Good morning to everyone. My name is Amanda Zindlani. I'm the committee assistant.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ian Nanjenga, and I'm a monitor from PMG.
Good morning. My name is Savile Ndlovu. I'm a monitor from PMG.
Good morning, Chair, committee members. I'm from civil society, from ALTA. here to advise where we are asked.
Morning, members and colleagues. My name is Aubrey Ramo. I'm the senior policy analyst from the Minerals Council. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Thabang Molusi. I'm a researcher in the office of Mamangwenya. Thank you very much.
We can continue with our meeting. Okay, we can start.
Good morning, everybody. My part this morning is just to speak on the legislation that was not dealt with by the committee last year. We're going to be reading from Mr. Eustace's document, which reads on the cover, the first committee planning meeting, background, talking points, and discussion of the way forward. On page 2 of that document, there are 3 pieces of legislation that was not dealt with by the committee in the 5th Parliament. The one bill comes from the Department of Mineral Resources. It's the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Bill, the MPRDA. This was a remitted bill.
I'm sorry, Chair. Afka, where are you? Which one are you reading from? I'm sorry, Chair. This one, of course. Thank you.
This was a remitted bill which the committee dealt with and eventually stopped in the middle of the process because there was a withdrawal from the part of the minister, but that was never formally communicated to the committee or parliament. So that bill, the MPRDA, is still with the NCOP. They're busy sorting out how we're going to proceed with that bill. I have spoken to the NCOP and they're getting back to me as to what the NCOP is going to do with regards to the MPRDA. The other 2 bills, they come from the Department of Environmental Affairs and the Department of Agriculture, Forestry, Fisheries. The one is the National Environmental Management Laws Amendment Bill, and the other one is the National Forest Amendment Bill. Both these bills were not dealt with in its entirety by the committee in the last parliament because there was no time and there was an NCOP cut-off date which the departments did not adhere to. So these bills are also still with the NCOP. They just have to be revived by the NCOP and referred back to the committee. Then this committee will be in a position to deal with this 2 pieces of legislation. There are other bills that are coming to the committee. As soon as they are ATC'd and referred to the committee, I will then alert members as to what they are and from which department they are. Thank you. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Any question on that? None? Or you have something in this matter? Do you have any question? Yes?
No, Chairperson, I don't have any questions, just a comment in terms of what was communicated to us.
Yeah,
the process. I'm just talking about the process now, following the process so that we can also be in the loop in terms of when the bills will be tabled and when it will come, the other 2, when it will come to the committee, then we can can maybe deal with it in that fashion. Thanks.
Okay, are you fine?
Yeah, I'm fine, Chairperson. I think what did not come out clear is what were the challenges in relation to the withdrawal of the of the MPRDA. What were the challenges? Were there any challenges? If none, yes, then what would be the process?
Thank you. The challenge with regards to the MPRDA is that it's a remitted bill. The committee already started a process. It can't just be withdrawn by the committee. We've got to, as far as we are know and have been advised by the NCOP, that's why they're still going to look at the matter and come back to us. The committee stopped at the we did our negotiating mandates. We were in the process of putting forth an amendment list to send to provinces to forward a final mandate. But at the time, the minister pronounced in the newspaper that they are withdrawing the bill. So the chairperson at the time thought, until further communication has been received from the office of the minister via the NCOP, they left everything at that point to deal with other pieces of legislation which needed to be finalized. So that is where it lied at the time. We are just waiting for the NCOP to give clarity on how to move forward with this bill, seeing it was a remitted bill in the 5th Parliament. So the entire committee membership has changed, excepting for 3 or 4 members. So, and also how to deal with the remitted bill, whether we still send it to provinces, whether we start over, the NCOP has to give guidance on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, members. I understand that we have a time pressure this morning, and typically what we would do is dedicate almost an entire meeting to work through the legacy of a committee. It was 5 years' worth of work. I do not think that is going to work this morning. What I have taken the liberty to do is reinterpret what is meant with the legacy of a committee. We have two types of legacies. We have a content legacy, and then we have a practice legacy, a method of doing oversight legacy. What I'm going to focus on is the PowerPoint presentation that I have put together. The speaking notes that the Secretary used, the second page, I can also go through that and give a snapshot of the content of departmental matters that either stayed behind or that the committee struggled with. But if you look at the first 10 or so slides of what I am presenting in terms of our legacy, it speaks towards the challenge of the committee being able to perform oversight and problems that I have picked up in the 4th and in the 5th Parliament that I would very much like to be able to highlight to the 6th Parliament committee up front, and also attempt to introduce a proposed oversight structure that Parliament is at the moment considering that has the potential of reducing the challenges that we have experienced with NCOP oversight. For the benefit of the legacy report, I also would like to refer right back to the mandate of a select committee when doing oversight. We have multiple departments, but the key issues that the committee is mandated to look at is to detect and prevent abuse, arbitrary behavior, or illegal and unconstitutional conduct on the part of government and public entities, to ensure fiscal responsibility and accountability, to ensure that government policies are actually delivered, and to improve government transparency and enhance public trust. What I would like to get to in the next couple of minutes is the challenges the NCOP committees experience in performing that mandate. We try to schedule meetings according to time slots available, and we try to manage the oversight activity of a committee as carefully and as thoroughly as possible. But we have challenges in terms of managing the outputs coming from a committee, and these, for me, are more important to highlight immediately than the content of what the committee covered in the last 5 years. Towards the end of the fifth parliament, the high-level panel looking at key legislation and the impact of the key legislation in the country released a report that produced quite a bit of insight into the challenges that I'm trying to highlight. The first paragraph that I want to highlight is the statement that came from the committee's report, and that the critical issue confronting policymakers with respect to the overarching policy goals of legislation affecting the shape and the rate of growth of the economy is the extent to which all of its key elements are compatible with one another. Now, that's the first important statement. We have conflicting departments in our portfolio. We have mineral resources, we have agriculture, we have rural development. Those departments tend not to be able to occupy the same space. We have environmental resources, we have fisheries, we have forestry. They also tend not to be able to coexist in the same space. So immediately the compatibility of policy, of goals, and of targets becomes an oversight challenge for the committee. The policies of individual departments don't take the other departments into account. The legislation of individual departments don't take other departments into account. And the budgets that are allocated for key functions are often scattered across multiple departments. And with poor interaction between those, the service delivery outcomes isn't what it could be. So there's a compatibility challenge. And then there's a reference to compatibility also in terms of spheres of government, deliverables, and planned targets. The Select Committee's oversight highlights how a good policy at national level does not always translate into the achievement of planned targets at local government level. It is a significant challenge, and it's a matter that is difficult to thoroughly perform oversight over if you have four different departments and all of their entities to consider. But this is a very important oversight challenge of the committee. The last issue to highlight is what is politely called trade-offs that should be made. The realistic term for a trade-off that should be made is which department, which focus of government gets its way and which do not. If mining is pushed forward, it does not mean that agriculture remains optimal. It does not mean that land reform remains optimal. One is pushed back in favor of another. All three matters are considered very important. Every State of the Nation address focuses almost solely on economic development, on the matter of land reform, and on the matter of employment. But as we see in the Select Committee of Land, Environment, Agriculture, Minerals, those don't work together. They simply do not work together in synergy, and it's an oversight challenge. It's also a performance challenge for the departments that happen to come second on the list of prioritization. They often don't meet their targets. They often are underfunded in their mandate. So departmental planning, resource allocation, impact of national objectives and the citizens' expectations and rights are what are the key issues in those trade-offs. We do not need to highlight the problems. I'm sure each member's individual constituency meetings are full of citizens' statements regarding what they enjoy about what government is doing and what they find challenging about what government is doing. A lot of these center around the challenge of making everybody happy, making development possible, making agriculture possible, making employment opportunities available. The second statement from that panel that I wanted to highlight is one that read, the panel has been confronted from the testimony of the public and experts alike with evidence of weakness on the part of government to execute policy and legislation. Now, that is one of our oversight positions that we need to look at is, are there such weaknesses and what are the underlying causes? There are many areas where submissions to the panel lauded the direction and the substance of policy and legislation and found no fault with the content, but raised fundamental concerns about the implementation and enforcement of existing laws. The committee is very well aware of those. If I just list three out of my head, one for each department, MPRDA and public consultation, significant challenge. Environmental affairs' role in the one environmental system. When we look at the environmental and biodiversity conservation legislation that's in place as contrasted against what's going on in terms of mineral resources activity, permitting, activity in sensitive areas, there's fundamental concerns being raised there. Air quality is another one where there's fundamental concerns being raised. In terms of rural development and land reform, Extended Security of Tenure Act, ESTA, the prevention of evictions from farms, the improvement of insecure tenure on land, are all issues that on paper is addressed by government, but in practice is not thoroughly dealt with. And those have been observed in the Fourth Parliament, have been observed in the Fifth Parliament. What challenges me is that we are going to still be observing them in the Sixth. That's a span potentially of 15 years of observing a challenge. There needs to be a point that we get to where it's no longer an observed challenge. The last slide that I'm using on the high-level panel is the paragraph that read, these breakdowns in execution occur despite an extensive machinery designed to monitor the executive and to hold it accountable for outcomes. This brings into focus questions concerning the effectiveness of governance and accountability mechanisms, including the role of Parliament in providing oversight. Now, unfortunately, that's a paragraph that is directly aimed at activities of committees like this one. It does speak to planning matters, resource allocation, impacts of objectives, and again, citizen consultation. But the question that for me has to be highlighted from this is, what does Parliament do with the knowledge that it has? What does Parliament do with the information that flows from oversight, from committee meetings? The way the current timetable of the NCOP works, and I think you've had quite a challenging 3 weeks of introduction into how the timetable of the NCOP works, it is more of a running from a week-to-week commitment than focused and continued oversight and reporting on issues. So I'll again want to come back to this slide. Just looking at those four issues again. I would like to suggest that when we consider the strategic planning of the committee, that we consider the challenges that were highlighted in the high-level panel report and others, also what I'll highlight here, but that the committee gets to a point where it feels comfortable that it is able to perform those four tasks with the amount of time set aside for the committee's work. A timetable that is full to the brim with activity, but which leaves little opportunity to ensure that these actions are taken, unfortunately does not lead to oversight. It leads to the generation of knowledge, it leads to interaction, but it doesn't affect change or report potential solutions, which is the risk that we are facing. This is what I'm trying to highlight in terms of the theory of oversight as I have experienced it. We have an idealized annual performance and oversight timetable that's roughly based on the budget cycle of a department. We have two houses performing these tasks in synergy, but in theory we cover everything from policy to budget allocation that flows to viable projects or programs that ensure service delivery and value for money, and that in the end reaches the attainment of policy and objectives. At the moment, our oversight is structured on this assumption. The experience, however, is that there are impediments sitting between policy and budget and service delivery at a lower government sphere level. The writing is unfortunately relatively small to make the slide fit, but the theory of that slide simply says that between the national executive planning and budget allocation and service delivery lies numerous potential challenges to that service delivery, whether it is the amount of finances allocated to a task, the amount of individuals that staff provincial down to municipal structures. There's only four there, but they're not the only four. The slide's already too small, and I apologize for that. The theory is just simply there are challenges to the service delivery that our ideal oversight program do not take into account. The theory, therefore, is that there's a need for specifically select committee oversight to take this into account. It is not a case of trying to pinpoint these and to report only on these, but to take challenges into account when oversight is designed. National departments need to align policy and strategy with national policy and strategy. That we are aware of. Annual planning cycles, budget allocation, international agreement and legislation is centered around those national objectives. What select committee oversight often lacks is at local government level, at provincial government level, at public engagements, and at sectoral events, there is a lack of understanding the inputs that can be gleaned from these events. And there's a lack of a feedback mechanism that allows the committee to feed these experiences back into the oversight reporting system.
we have a typical scenario where the moment there's talk about a select committee studying a process in a provincial government or studying a process in local government, that there is a problem with separations of power and that Parliament is interfering in a sphere of government that it's not doing oversight over. That's not what I'm proposing with this slide. What I'm proposing with this slide is that there are channels of communication and legislation set up to allow national government to track and monitor and evaluate how governance is working in the lower spheres. Those are typically ignored by select committee oversight, and those channels and pieces of legislation, the Division of Revenue Act, Municipal Finance Management legislation, those specify how financial transfers from a national department to the other spheres of government need to be tracked and reported on. Until the NCOP takes careful note of how these interactions are managed, we will continue to rely on the national department coming to committee meetings and reporting to the select committee its view of provincial and local government performance, which is pretty much what the 4th and the 5th Parliament was about. The national department was called to report on service delivery at local and provincial level. There was no independent mechanism of verification set up in select committee oversight for that. At the moment, and I'm preempting this model, but at the moment there is a oversight and accountability model for the 6th Parliament very close to being presented to the political heads of both houses of the committee. It is not adopted yet, but I am assuming that if the timelines of presentation are what I have been told by committee section, there's a very high likelihood that by early next year, March, April next year, committees could potentially start planning according to the new oversight strategy. This is a slide taken out of that strategy. It is an ideal annual committee cycle of a proposed cooperative government and intergovernmental relations model. What it basically boils down to is, if we take Department of Agriculture for instance, more than 50%, close to 56% of the entire budget of Department of Agriculture gets transferred to provinces as a conditional grant. Other departments also have transfers, or they have provincial departments that finances are transferred to, and those departments perform functions and report back to national government. Until there isn't a synergy between the portfolio committee annual reporting cycle, which looks at quarterly performance at national level and which looks at the budget allocations at national level, until those transfers are not mirrored in the select committee oversight with a similar focus on the fate of grant transfers and the reporting channels that open between provincial government, local government, and the national departments. Until all of that is not taken into consideration and reported between houses, shared between houses, what select committee oversight is doing is a reactive study of symptoms or of a specific area of interest of the committee without placing that interest inside the bigger role that it plays in service delivery. This cycle does not mean that the select committees have to stop doing what they're doing and to start focusing on financial tracking. It means that when there is a matter to be looked at national level, the answer for a challenge in service delivery that a portfolio committee is grappling with very often sits in the provincial or the local government sphere. Joint oversight had been suggested already in the fifth parliament, but there isn't a strong mechanism for it yet. This is potentially one of the mechanisms that will be explored. When a National Assembly committee identifies a challenge, and that challenge also includes a provincial or a local government entity or government department, the only way to completely understand the problem is for portfolio committees and select committees to work together and to apply joint oversight, joint planning, joint reporting to Parliament in order to finally understand or to better understand the service delivery challenge. This slide is hopefully the last one that is overly technical. I put this together in the fifth parliament when committee members raised concerns about overstepping into other spheres of government, where the separation of powers were a concern. The slide merely highlights that legislation of the country in terms of the Constitution, Division of Revenue Act, Municipal Systems Act, Municipal Structures Act, IGR Framework Act, PMFA, all contain mechanisms through which the national department is responsible for ensuring that the funds are spent as required. It does not mean that the national department transfers funds to a provincial entity, cites the separation of power, steps back, and then only asks for feedback at the end of a financial term. It is responsible for monthly tracking of expenditure and for allocation and for performance monitoring. This committee has not focused on those channels of oversight at all. There simply has not been time. We do not have an annual cycle that matches the National Department's quarterly performance reviews, and hence pretty much for the duration of the fourth and the fifth parliament, any question on how these grant funds were applied in provinces were put to the national department, and the national department comes to the committee and assures the committee that these oversight structures exist. The only challenge is that the committee is well aware of the staffing challenges at local government level, especially in terms of financial management. And one of the requirements of the Division of Revenue Act is that no funds can be allocated to a municipality that does not have a financial manager, does not have accounting structures. It would be interesting to just take that as a first oversight criteria to study how many municipalities have those accounting structures in existence versus how many municipalities receive grant funding. That would be a first step that the committee could consider. Because without ring-fenced, carefully monitored and carefully studied and controlled transfers, what happens is that the money disappears into a joint department budget, and the likelihood of it being spent exactly as National reports it is not very high under all circumstances. with all of that technical background, I now want to get to the unfortunate reality of select committee meeting scheduling. At present, we do not know the full schedule of this year remaining, but there is not a significant amount of oversight windows left. And the reality is the moment some piece of legislation becomes referred to the committee, it would likely consume most of the remaining year of the committee's oversight work. On average, we've experienced 24 to 30 days. Those are the Tuesday slots allocated to the committee, annually available. Take the four votes that we have, five with energy added to it, perform the basic APP and budget meetings, perform the basic sectoral events that the committee is responsible for attending, such as taking Parliament to the people and provincial weeks, and perform the legislative oversight that typically is required of the committee, and those 24 to 30 days are gone. The committee has barely touched a province, has barely touched an entity, has barely had the opportunity to study a single of the critical challenges identified in strategic planning. The reason I say this feeds into this slide. 18 points of unfinished business from the fifth parliament, and the sad truth is some of these dragged on from the fourth parliament. 18 points of unfinished business where we typically have 24 to 30 meeting days a year would mean that if we merely propose to the committee that the unfinished business is dealt with first, it would be towards the end of 2021 that anything new can be approached. And that being said, these meetings allows the committee one interaction opportunity. It does not allow an oversight visit to a site. It does not allow a follow-up meeting to discuss a report with recommendations. It allows a single opportunity to interrogate information. I think it is safe to say that in that lies part of the problem of one of the statements of the high-level panel report that says that the mechanisms that is put in place at Parliament does not appear always to touch on the issues that Parliament interrogates efficiently. I do not want to call the NCOP inefficient. I would very much want to see it flourish because it's the place in Parliament where the best oversight can be done, but not with a timeline that leads to 18 unfinished, seriously important matters that the committee had continually highlighted in its strategic planning as being important. We are looking at the sustainability of agricultural cooperatives and CPAs as the first one, right down to the results of farm equity schemes and the arrangements with parties. Morning.
Welcome, Honorable BB, Honorable Koni. We did receive your apology that you are still busy at the programming committee meeting. Welcome.
So, to highlight some of the issues, air quality management, that has led to litigation already. It has been on the committee's agenda for most of the fifth parliament. There has not been sufficient opportunity to deal with the matter, most of the time because the committee is pinned down with legislation and other important business. If we look at co-ops and CPAs, it is a known challenge for more than 9 years. The committee has not had the opportunity to produce a serious report with recommendations on the matter. If we look at a point very low down, the impact of mining on land utilization patterns, when we consult with communities affected by mining, it is not a new challenge, but it remains an unfinished line item in the committee's strategic plans from the entire Fifth Parliament. I do not want to carry on and on and on with the slides. What I would very much like to highlight is if we want to take anything from the legacy of the Fifth Parliament, it is that the committee that was present, and unfortunately we only have one member that was in the committee from the Fifth Parliament in the venue at the moment, but the committee that was present in the Fifth Parliament did not waste its oversight windows. It did not waste its committee meeting windows. Yet these issues remain outstanding. And that is what I would very much like to highlight as the legacy of the committee. The legacy of the committee, unfortunately, is the things that the committee could not get to, rather than the things that the committee could get to. Now, I have a proposed... Okay, that's basically just the summary that I wanted to say, that the reality is that the formalities of the committee is significant. The reporting of the committee suffers under that.
Kindly direct me to the document you're busy with.
I am using a PowerPoint slide that was distributed to the committee that has a cover page that says Select Committee for Land Reform, Environment, Mineral Resource and Energy, July 2019. That is it. And I am on slide number... I printed more than one per page. I think I'm on slide 18, if my slide reader on screen is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
What is before the committee, and I'm going to spend more time during the strat planning sessions that are upcoming to unpack this to the committee, but what I would seriously like to propose as a content individual is that those 18 topics are not standalone challenges. Those topics feed into themes that are related to each other. If the committee takes an individual challenge approach to oversight, there's the risk again that every year's timetable will be filled with a maximum amount of individual issues without these individual issues feeding into a report that has at its core the concern that drives the individual oversight matter. Each topic has a policy challenge, has a mandate overlap challenge, has a budget challenge. There's a reason why the committee considers that topic important. Identifying the underlying challenges is as important as doing the oversight over the individual challenges, because that would allow the committee in the background to populate reports that it, if it is satisfied with these reports, can report to the House on with recommendations. If we take the previous slide again, those 18 challenges, and we say, let's look at whether it is a legislative review challenge, whether it's a policy and strategy challenge, whether it's a budget challenge, whether it is a grant management challenge at provincial level. whether it is an issue of footprint of another department, for instance, a land claim being delayed by another department. Environmental affairs has a nature reserve. Agriculture has to acquire the land. Mineral resources has a mine there. There's a number of reasons why there could be a footprint of one department influencing the activity of another. Or there's a mandate challenge. There are at least five synergistic problems, oversight reasons to be looking at a topic. If we use that mindset and we go back to our 18 unresolved business matters of the Fifth Parliament, it boils down to 9 issues. In other words, they talk to each other in more than one instance. We have farmer support and optimal utilization of agricultural land, which contains more than one business item that was left unresolved. We have challenges with environmental local government competencies, air quality, waste management, and wastewater disposal. That was more than one business item. The land reform process, policy direction and impact. CPAs is a policy matter. CPA management is a legislative matter, but it forms part of the land reform process. We have a number of negative impacts of mining and the efficacy of the one environmental system. That comes up in more than one business item. Policy challenges and opportunities. The ocean's economy is oil and gas. It is environmental management, and it is fisheries and aquaculture development, all of which falls within the department's, within the committee's oversight mandate. I would like to propose that those are looked at together. It is pointless trying to determine individual activities. Aquaculture cannot happen in the same place somebody wants to explore for oil and gas. And you can't put a nature reserve at the same place that somebody wants to put an aquaculture venture. It is going to make more oversight sense studying those matters together, working towards a single reporting capacity on those matters. The green economy has got a number of overlaps. Waste management and the green economy should speak to each other. Local government has at its center of its waste management challenges the fact that waste management is an expense. For the green economy, waste could be a business. I do not understand why 9 years down the line we do not have a report going to the NCOP to state how municipalities has turned around something that was a cost and turned it into a income. 9 years down the line, it's still a cost, but we have a green economy focus. Those matters should be looked at together. Optimizing policy, intergovernmental relations, and cooperative governance for the integration of social and labor plans and municipal IDP. That is a standalone issue. We have scheduled, I think, at least 3 oversight visits. It just got more and more obvious on each visit that these problems are not being resolved. There is opportunity to approach it differently than to have a fourth meeting only to come back and say there's a problem. We know what the problem is based on reporting. The committee can continue its work on it without needing to schedule oversight. There's the opportunity for further action than another oversight. Policy, legislation, and regulatory impasse from the Department of Mineral Resources. There's a number of challenges in the oil and gas sector as well as in the mineral sector based on outstanding legislation. And then there's the biodiversity loss challenge that contains a number of individual matters. So what this slide, this is the last slide that I wanted to focus on this morning. I know that the members have requested that I do not spend too much time talking today. The committee will head into stress planning AFCO next term. Most of next term will contain strategic planning for the NCOP and for committees. I wanted to use this opportunity to focus on the importance of the strategic planning from a functional perspective, from a committee impact perspective. For the members that did arrive a little bit later, I might just want to highlight the fact that I highlighted the busy schedule of the committee, but the lack of reporting flowing from the busy schedule of the committee from the Fifth Parliament, and the proposal of integrated planning focusing on less matters but spending sufficient time on those matters to allow for a report to flow from the committee that contains a remedial action suggestion or something that the House can consider reporting to the National Assembly of. I do not want to make it sound as if the Fifth Parliament did not solve any problems, but I would want to feel that it created 85% knowledge and made 15% proposals. I think the committee would be frustrated if at the end of its term it also felt that it had 15% impact and created 85% volumes of printed paper that is sitting in the archives. So this was the last slide on this presentation. If the committee is interested in it, I can take the discussion document that was forwarded to the committee, quickly run through each department and highlight what is important matters in those departments, but I felt that this was more critical to begin with. The document can always be read. There are other matters on the agenda still, and I know that the committee's next engagement is 11 o'clock already. So if the committee is happy that I stop here, I will stop. If the committee instructs me to provide more background on individual departments, I will take that instruction.
Okay. And welcome, Honorable Ndongje, Ma'am Ndong. welcome to. I think, Mr. Joseph, it is important to deal with this document, but quickly, can you run to another document because we want all the members to be aware of what is happening in all the department. Quick, so that we can go to the next item.
On the second document supplied to the committee, it is called First Committee Planning Meeting Background Talking Points. It's dated the 2nd July. That's the date that it was created. I would refer to that document and start. I just want to repeat, I'm now in the document circulated called First Committee Planning Meeting of the 2nd of July. The legislation and oversight challenges has been highlighted. I want to jump to heading number 4, a summary of experience with departments. This provides a very quick background into the status quo of the Select Committee's experiences with the departments to date. It doesn't contain incredible technical detail. That is available. This is an introduction, basically, into what the committee has experienced. I did not put it into any slide form. I didn't know if there was time to handle that. So I will highlight issues and inform members as I'm moving along in it. I'll perhaps call it up on screen if that's possible. It's not going to help. It's even smaller than it should be. Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. I will also still refer to the departments in their old vote name. We obviously will have merged departments moving forward from the next budget vote. The first and most important issue is stable policy development and implementation from the department is not as it should be. It does not have a track record of having white papers in place for everything that financial allocations is being made for in its budget. And that is a bit of a concern because over time the department changes focus, shifts money around, prioritizes food security, for instance, but there's no overarching white paper on addressing food security. It's not mismanagement to do that, but it is very difficult to create a logical project management cycle with a lack of a white paper backing you up, because each new minister, each DG responsible for an area has to plan without a guiding national policy document. And we have seen subtle shifts in how finances is used and which type of project is considered more important. We've seen presidential special projects, and then we have seen war on hunger, and then we have seen Fetsatlala, and then we have seen shifts, constant shifts. And if a project is not finished, the budget that flowed into it for a number of years and then gets directed somewhere else means that there's no measurable impact or no attempt further to carry that impact forward into the next project. So you'll have a stream going in one direction, replaced by another stream, replaced by another stream. So the overall impact after 10 years of attempted food security intervention is not the same as if it was guided by a single policy. It's diffuse. The impact is not what it should be. Reporting to the committee has also been fragmented and a bit light on content. There is constant Auditor General and Financial and Fiscal Committee oversight reporting that basically states that the department uses targets that aren't measurable. If you do not have measurable targets, it makes it nearly impossible to evaluate service delivery because you cannot evaluate impact. The department continues to use those relatively vague targets. Following up with that is that Stats South Africa has discarded or changed the questions it asks in its statistical surveys. Its agricultural surveys, its employment census. Now that is a critical challenge. Anybody that tries to perform statistical analysis over time cannot measure the impact of a question that was asked in a census if that question stops being asked. If you change what you ask people, you stop the data flow. It's impossible to know whether the outreaches of your extension offices are working. Because,
because of time, can you go quickly to the critical issues?
Okay.
Because we left with only 5 minutes to go.
If we have a critical issue per department, I would say the lack...
Like your K7, the background document.
Yes. The lack of policy I highlighted, and basically on page 5, it starts looking at the NDP targets. There's a serious challenge with the NDP targets for agriculture. The NDP target for irrigated agriculture doesn't take into account that there isn't any water for that, and the million jobs created in agriculture doesn't take into account that we have lost 700,000 jobs in agriculture. So does it mean a million starting from that point, or a million after we've made up all the job losses as a result of challenges in agriculture. Agriculture is going backwards. The NDP keeps on saying we need to create a million more jobs. It doesn't state what the end target should be. So there's just basically this in the air desire to create jobs in agriculture, while the reality is that the jobs are being lost. Environmental affairs, I just want to highlight on page 8 the three bullets of air quality management, waste management, and provincial and municipal conservation management. Those are woefully understaffed and underbudgeted. The fourth point that the committee needs to take notice of is the one environmental system. It was designed to fast-track mining applications. My cynical view of it is it was designed to prevent objections to mining applications, because we now have a scenario where mining licenses are being issued inside of reserves, inside of agricultural areas, inside of water catchments, with no apparent appeal from the people that manage the legislation that puts into place those spaces. If you have an environmental system where you can mine a nature reserve and there isn't an immediate stop to that activity, it means that the one environmental system is not taking into consideration the environmental legislation of the country. So the environmental affairs has a challenge there. Rural development and land reform, oh, I can spend a day on their challenges. The last white paper for rural development and land reform was 1997. There was a very short and very devoid of targets green paper for discussion in 2011. But this did not flow into a change in policy, which means that almost everything that rural development is doing now has shifted away from its white paper or is not contained in the white paper at all. Recapitalization doesn't exist in the white paper. The white paper still speaks about small parcels of land, still considers a smallholder farmer an individual that mostly produces for own use and might sell extra. The last briefing we had from them, they were dishing out 480 hectares per smallholder farmers because they are now commercial. That's a shift from the white paper. It is not supplying large amounts of individuals with land. It's supplying some individuals with large amounts of land. So there's an enormous shift away from what is the only policy we can evaluate them against, apart from the underfunding. The second point I would like to highlight with them is underfunding, agriculture as well. I always like to contrast the activity of rural development and agriculture with the commercial agriculture sector. Commercial agriculture is down to about 35,000 farmers. It spends over 110 billion rand a year to farm. Rural development and land reform and agriculture together hasn't even got a tenth of that, and it's trying to transform the entire sector. It's never going to transform the sector with the money it's got. The policies are destined to fail. So funding remains a challenge. Legislation with rural development remains a challenge. ESTA isn't being used. More people are being moved out of areas where they had insecure tenure now than in the period leading up to 1994. There's been more people shifted out of areas 94 to now compared to a large part of the previous government's activities, apart from the homelands. The losses have been incredible over the last 10 to 12 years of people with insecure tenure. Mineral resources, I would like to highlight the fact that it needs its legislation resolved fast. It needs to have its charter resolved fast. It loses almost as much legislation as what is brought against it. It's very seldom that the department wins when it is taken to court over anything it does policy-wise. And this is a concern. The charter is stuck in court. The MPRDA is stuck in technical challenges. There's no oil and gas legislation. That needs to be resolved in order to create policy clarity and legislative clarity moving forward. The last matter with them is consultation and the rights of individuals. There's two different universes. There's the rest of the country and then there's the Department of Mineral Resources. According to the Department of Mineral Resources, they consult properly on everything they do. According to the rest of the country, they do not consult properly on everything they do, but that doesn't appear to dent the policy wording of the department. They've been taken to court on so many occasions on consultation, it has not had any retrospective review of policy and matters considered by the department in terms of how it consults. And it's only going to get worse from this point forward, because now they are losing key pieces of litigation based on the arguments that is before the committee and inside the committee's report. Full prior informed consent, IPILRA, the recognition of prior land right uses, those charges are holding in court. But those calls were rejected by the department when the consultation that the committee had with the department were discussed with the department. They dismiss those issues when it's raised by the committee. They lose those issues in court when it's taken to court. That's an untenable situation. Something has to be done about those challenges. And then I'll stop, because and the energy that we have inherited, we have not had any oversight experience with. Therefore, I cannot highlight challenges other than the most relevant energy related topic for the committee is how the independent power production rollout and local and provincial government rights to secure electricity independently will take shape. We live in the Western Cape, which is industrialized, Gauteng, which is industrialized. Those provinces are not allowed to solve their own electricity challenges when there's load shedding because Eskom can't get their coal power stations to work. It's, again, an untenable situation. You're holding the entire country's economy in the hands of a utility that is struggling, and you're not allowing independent producers to come into a sphere and to help a local government or a provincial government as it is now. Legislation is being looked at. Those deals with independent producers are being brought forward, but they are not getting South Africa to the point where we do not have problems when Eskom doesn't work. And Eskom doesn't work, so we always have problems.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Joseph.
Okay, we'll stop.
Members,
there.
I think because this document that Mr. Joseph was presenting, it is very important for us. When you come, maybe we'll, in our next meeting, we'll just have at least 10 or 20, 15 minutes to deal, to continue with this document, because it's really, really important. We must go through it and understand what is happening to the department, so that when we engage with them, we must be able to engage with them correctly. Members, because we don't have time, I will say before we go to questions, can we go to our next item, so that when other members leave this meeting, we must be dealt with the minutes, the previous minutes. You did receive the minutes, honorable members. I don't know. Page one, is it fine? Go to the minutes, page one. Anything? Page two. Honorable Arnold.
Chairperson, can I just make a correction on page two?
Page two.
By my name, I'm not from the Northern Cape, but from the Western Cape.
Woo! We like you for Northern Cape, yes. Welcome to Northern Cape. Okay, Ms. Honorable Analyst from Western Cape, and then Honorable Connie. Yes, my dear. Honorable Connie, you were not in the meeting by that time. Then we did receive your apology. It's supposed to be noted. Because... We apologize for that, Honorable Connie. Yes. Thanks for reminding us. And then page 3. Page 4. Page 5. I'm proposing the second for this minute. If there is... No. If the... Honorable Connie? We know. Honorable Ndongeni proposed move. Honorable Bibi,
second.
It means the minute we adopted the minute with the corrections, the amendment with that. I don't know before I can say we can go, honorable members, maybe there is agent thing or anything that you need to ask about. Okay, Honorable Nana, and then Honorable Matibe and Honorable Arnold. Yes, Honorable Nana.
Chairperson, whenever some people are not in our meetings are orderly. You know, when they walk in, it becomes chaotic. Chairperson, thanks very much. The legacy report, Chairperson, if you listened carefully, it's a chilling reminder about our inability to perform oversight. And this is as a result of various reasons. And it is a report that I would want to propose to this committee that we have to treat it with utmost importance it deserves. And Mr. Yoster has done quite some startling work in coming up with this report. Having said that, Chair, I would further want to propose that we won't be doing justice to this report if we glance over it. I would want to propose that it forms the basis of our strat plan. And members would have ample time to go through. I'm not suggesting that we didn't go through them. We'll have ample time to have gone through the report two times or three times. But lastly, I did see, Mr. Yoster, you provided some proposals in some areas. I would further want to propose that as politicians, sometimes we do provide proposals, but when bureaucrats give guidance, it tends to make more sense to us. So I would really want to request you to probably provide more proposals and solutions in the strat plan, so that makes our lives easy. I wouldn't want us to be bogged down in debating the ills and the shortcomings of the fourth and fifth parliament, but rather be focused, be solution driven and be solution focused. If that makes sense, Chair.
Honourable Matibe, and then you will follow Honourable Kony.
Yeah, no, thanks. I and to welcome the presentation by Mr. Just. I think I do second. I don't want us, when I looked at the unfinished business of the fifth parliament, if we can just rush over it, we might not do justice to the presentation. And I think what the Mr. Juste can do for us is to just highlight areas where we think we can look at, like he did. I think the way they synchronize the 18 unfinished business to be like 9 theme areas, I think is quite helpful. There are areas that they can do likewise, so that we must get a lot of time to look into those and also have a program that tries and address. I don't know about committees, whether we look at committees that have got more departments in it, or we just look at committees as select committees without looking at the departments that they have. Because looking at the unfinished business is because there were many departments within that select committee, and the oversight was a bit complex. I second.
Okay. The second Honorable Nanane. Honorable Kony.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we must take note that this is one of the, if not the most crucial committee, select committee in the upper house of parliament, being the NCOP. I'm actually happy that in your speech, when you after you were appointed as the chairperson, you emphasized yourself that we must make sure that we deal with whatever was left behind in the fifth parliament. So, in the NCOP, we should be constantly on the ground and staring at each other in that cold house of the NCOP. And what we must also emphasize on is the implementation, because we go to people to do oversight, we say we will come and address their issues, and then we never come go back to them. So I would also support the three speakers on allocating or dedicating just a full day, one day, when we come back from recess, to deal with this properly. Thank you.
Okay. No, I think I do. We in agreement that before, maybe a day before our strat plan, we can take that day, the whole day, we deal all the issues of this committee, a day before our strat plan, and then the second day we can continue with our strat plan, so that we can do justice to our own issues. Okay, honourable members,
Sorry, Chair. It would seem the divorce carpet and set between myself and the EFF.
Yeah, it's
over. It was a fat and set. It was not a marriage. It was a fat and set.
Sit down, honourable members. This meeting is still on. So, members, let me take this opportunity to thank you and to thank all the visitors to our committee. I think even in that day, you will join us to come and deal with this issues of our committee. We really appreciated your visit to our meeting.
Invite the secretaries that are responsible for this committee.
Okay, no, we will.
Advocates, they must also come.
No, thank you very much. Our meeting is adjourned. See you in the next. Thank you.